You know, Dan, I consider myself someone that looks at sports through an objective lens. You know what I mean? Like, so, like I have my favorites, but, you know, kind of like with the Yankees, I have no ill will towards the Astros. I have no ill will really towards the Mets or the Red Sox. Same thing as a Rangers fan. Don't really care about the Islanders that much. Stuff like that. I don't root for any team to do bad or to lose unless they're playing my favorite team. But there is one man that has changed that whole thought process for me. And I was so happy to see him lose the other day. And that's Nick Sirianni. Welcome back to the ASN podcast, ladies and gentlemen. Dan Tracy, how we doing, bud?
Pretty good. I wasn't sure if that was going in the direction of Arthur Smith or if that was going in the direction of somebody else. I should have known, though. I should have known it was Nick Sirianni.
Just the most punchable face in all of sports, really.
Well, we'll see. I mean, there are a few people who seem to want him gone in Philadelphia, but I don't think that's going to happen. So I think you'll have to deal with him for another year. But we'll talk more about that in a bit. I'm doing well. I'm happy we can come together here for episode 54. Like we were talking about, there's been a ton going on because it's not just the NFL playoffs that we have to talk about, but there was a ton of coaching moves. And honestly, the last week was a week that, you know, in the coaching ranks, probably one of the most significant ever.
Yeah.
You know, in football history. I mean, two coaches who it seemed like were just trading championships every other year. I think for a while it was like, you know, if Alabama won one year, the Patriots didn't, then the Patriots would win and Alabama wouldn't. So, you know, it's a whole era of football that kind of went away when Nick Saban retired and the Patriots pushed Bill Belichick off to the side. But there's a lot to talk about.
You know, the beauty of all these either stepping down in some cases or firings, resignings, whatever it may be, every single one of them, in my opinion, felt completely right. Like, it felt like the right time for everything. Like, even Mike Vrabel, for someone that you wanted to mention as well, like, it kind of felt right. This is a younger team that's getting worse and worse every year, and he really did get the most. I mean, there were some brutally bad Tennessee Titans teams on paper that were finishing as, like, the number one seed in the AFC. He squeezed every ounce of talent and every ounce of effort out of those guys that he could. This year, it seems like Tennessee wants to take this team in a more offensive approach, and I really couldn't blame them because their offense was pretty putrid this year, and they got a lot of young, exciting players. I think Tajay Spears, you know, Will Levis, guys like that, exciting guys that they could build around on the offensive side. So it makes sense to bring in an offensive-minded coach. Bill Belichick, same thing. It's like, you know, they've been stuck in mediocrity ever since Tom Brady left. But someone actually had like a beautiful quote, and this is the way that I really love to look at it, because I hate this, oh, did Brady make Belichick or did Belichick make Brady, whatever it may be. And then obviously once the Bucs won the Super Bowl without Bill Belichick, you know, it was like, oh, well, Brady then made Bill Belichick. But I really think that they both made each other. I think it was just a perfect matrimony of just, you know, sheer effort and grind and grit and ability and smarts in coaching. It was just the perfect, it was two evil football geniuses working together. We've never seen anything like it. I don't think we'll ever see anything like it ever again. And then same thing with Pete Carroll as well. You would think, I thought that this was a disappointing season for the Seattle Seahawks after making the playoffs last year and honestly getting better on paper as a roster. I would have thought that they would make the playoffs 9-8. They missed out on it. You know, it just sucks because I said to a few of my buddies in a group chat, I texted them after Saban retired, and we kind of knew that Bill Belichick was coming after that. Yeah, it was inevitable that he was going to step aside. I said, man, we are really watching our youth just kind of just it's zapped right in front of our eyes. Because like I was 3 years old. Were you even born when Bill Belichick was announced as the head coach of the New England Patriots?
Nope. He had been the Patriots coach my entire life.
I was 2.5 years old when Bill Belichick was appointed. Same thing. We were talking about Pete Carroll around the lunch table in high school.
Yeah, I was 9 when he was hired. And you know, and we all remember they're closely connected too, because we all remember Super Bowl 49, which was, you know, in one of the best ever.
Yeah.
With the Malcolm Butler interception, and it was the two of them. on the sideline. And so, you know, that's a whole era from that game that's gone. I think that the interesting things, though, about Pete Carroll and Mike Vrabel, I think, you know, may it have been the right time for a split? Sure. I don't think we really expected that to be. I think if they were going to leave, it would have been mutual. And, you know, with Mike Vrabel, I mean, he was fired. Like, he was straight up fired. They didn't make any mistake about it. And I think it was, I think that was the unexpected part of it. And honestly, I don't think that's, even though he may have gotten the most out of that roster and they're kind of rebuilding and they're looking ahead in the future, I feel like that's a little bit of a misstep by Titans ownership, where it seems like a lot of it was not about results, but it was about his relationship with the front office. And, you know, after the news came out, Rand Carthon, who's the GM of the Titans, was hired a year ago. He was like, oh, no, we had a great relationship. That doesn't mean anything. I mean, every other report, and including the owner's statement herself, who said that, you know, the next head coach needs to be fully on the same page as the leadership. But it all implies there was a problem there. And picking, I know he was only hired a year ago, and maybe your mistake was hiring Rand Carthon, but picking, you know, the GM, the GM who's only been there a year, over Mike Vrabel, you know, it's a risk, especially if this next coaching search, you know, is a mess, then everybody's going to be fired if it doesn't work out.
Yeah. You know, the thing is, though, I never understood, like, this one-off essentially between, like, ownership and the GMs and the head coaches. I think that if you are going to bring in a new head coach or a new GM, it's got to be a package deal for me, because doesn't this kind of seem like a wasted year? Like, you bring in a GM and then you guys go, what, 6-11, and then you fire a good head coach in Mike Vrabel. Like, it doesn't make sense. I feel like it should be a package deal. You hire the GM first. The GM gets his own head coach, because you have to be in lockstep to win in the NFL now. We've seen it time and time again. The front office and the coaching staff have to be in lockstep with player personnel. That's why you see all these clashes. Like, but at the same time, it seems like the grass is sort of kind of greener for Vrabel, because this team seems to be going downhill, like, talent-wise, performance-wise, all that kind of stuff. It's going to be, you know, some rough sailing ahead. You got growing pains with your assumed franchise quarterback in Will Levis. You know, there are so many jobs. Everyone thought New England was the destination for him because of the ties, but you and I both know people that, I don't want to say, like, uneducated people, maybe the more casual fans, but you and I probably both know that Gerard Mayo was someone that was being groomed to take over for Bill Belichick for at least the past 3 or 4 years now. Like, everyone was saying how much of a brilliant football mind he was, and he was going to be basically the successor of Bill Belichick. So it didn't really, like, I was like, yeah, everyone's saying that Vrabel could be, but I think it's going to be Gerard Mayo. And then it came out pretty soon after that Mayo was going to be appointed the head coach. And I know something that we didn't mention yet until now, but I kind of feel the same thing about Antonio Pierce. Like, he is the front runner for the job in Vegas. And I mean, he really got the most out of that roster since he took over. But I know a lot of time you see, like, an interim head coach takes over, and then it kind of, like, gives a shot in the ass of adrenaline to the roster. But this roster really seemed like they were genuinely playing for Antonio Pierce. I mean, Max Crosby even came out and said he was very transparent. And I feel like we need to see more of that, especially about talking about higher ups in the NFL from players, because at the end of the day, the people that perform on the field are the players, not the coaches, not the GMs, not the owners. Maybe we should listen to these guys a little bit more. When your best overall player is saying, listen, for me, it's Antonio Pierce or I'm out, I'm not doing my quote unquote due diligence as a front office. Because when have the Raiders ever done due diligence and it worked out well? I don't remember the last time it's worked out well. So you know what? You have the results already. You've seen what he can do. You get him a real quarterback, because, I mean, he was winning games with Aiden O'Connell throwing 90 passing yards. You know what I'm saying? You get him a real quarterback. You have a roster that has a bunch of talent on it already. Next thing you know, who knows? Antonio Pierce could turn this into a perennial playoff team. I think you stick with what you got. You have the results. You have the player backing. What else do you need to see as an organization?
Yeah, I don't understand how this could happen twice to Mark Davis, and he still wants to do it a third time. Where he, you know, the first time he fires Jack Del Rio, who had gone 12-4 in you know, not the year they fired him, but the year before, and then, you know, to make a splash to hire John Gruden. He was fired because John Gruden was available, and he wanted to come to Oakland, eventually Vegas, and then he, you know. When Rich Bisaccia does a good job, takes him to the playoffs when really nobody expected it, he goes and makes another splash with Josh McDaniels, you know, who is I guess he understood it was a hot head coaching candidate, and he saw a chance to make a bit of a splash, and obviously that was a complete failure. You know, I don't understand why the third time you'd be like, well, you know, Antonio Pierce, everybody believes in him, and he was winning games with a roster that isn't very good. But you know, Jim Harbaugh is out there, so let me go get him, or let me look at whoever else. I mean, at this point, look, it's been eight or nine days since the season ended for the Raiders. Actually, 10 days, I think. And he's still not the head coach, and they've interviewed a couple other guys. I know they had to interview some guys for the Rooney Rule, but. They've, you know, he's interviewed with the Titans. I forget if Antonio Pierce had another interview. I forget if the Falcons were involved. But at this point, it's clear he's not sold on him. I mean, you know, if he was sold on him, he would be the head coach today. Even if he is eventually hired, you know, I kind of made it clear a minute ago. But my feeling is that Mark Davis maybe thinks that Jim Harbaugh would consider going to Vegas. Now, I don't know why he would. Like, I don't, you know, seeing the way the franchise is run, like, I don't know why that would be of more interest than, like, the Falcons or even the Chargers, where at least you have a quarterback. My thought is he may be holding out for Jim Harbaugh. But obviously, Mark Davis isn't sold on Antonio Pierce. And
I don't
really think there's an excuse for that after the way, you know, his own ambition, the last two coaching searches completely flopped.
Yeah, and I was pretty vocal on one of our favorite Twitter accounts ever, NFL Notifications, which honestly, I'll be honest with you, after the last few tweets from this guy over the past couple days, he's worse than NFL Rookie Watch, he's worse than JPA, he's worse than MLF.
But I think it's like, I do think it's bait. And I don't know if NFL Rookie Watch is bait. I think that might actually just be like
– be an idiot?
Yeah. Yes.
All right. So here's my theory. Well, all right, we're going to circle back to this. It's all going to – I promise this is all going to be in the same circle. It is. So ML Football and JPA, I think personally, are run by the same person, and both of those accounts – are overseas. I think they're like UK fans or something like that, because they do not understand. Whoever runs, if it's two people or one person, they don't understand football at all. It's all clickbait. And I genuinely think those people are morons and they just don't understand football. NFL Rookie Watch, I'm assuming, is run by like a 17-year-old kid that just has cold takes and he's an idiot too. NFL Notification, I've spoke to the guy personally before. I have. I just think that he's a troll that like has really bad ideas and just kind of puts them out there just to get engagement to make some money. And honestly, it works because it's so bad. I mean, just for instance, I think you saw this last night. I saw that you liked it, but I have to for people who don't know. So this is a tweet that I quoted with a GIF from NFL Notifications. It was, and I quote, "The Rams tight end Tyler Higbee has torn his ACL. In 2017, Higbee pleaded guilty to a hate crime against a Middle Eastern man where he yelled, 'ISIS, these nuts,' and gave the man a concussion." That's it. That's the end of the tweet. So I don't know where he was going with that. What I assume is he's saying, hey, this is karma for, you know, that. I don't know if that's true, by the way. I kind of looked it up and I didn't really see anything about it. I saw like murmurs of it. Maybe someone tried to sweep it under the rug, whatever it may be. So I'm not totally saying that that's a lie, but I didn't really see too much about it. Anyway, what I was getting to was Ugh, damn, now I forgot what I was getting to with NFL notifications.
You promised.
No, I remember. I promised it was coming full circle, and it was. So he had a very, it seemed like a tweet just purely against Max Crosby. And he was like, it literally said like, well, here goes Max Crosby wanting to play NFL GM and wanting to hire and wanting to hire Antonio Pierce as the head coach, or he says that he's out. Do the Raiders give in to his demands? And I was like, this is a very bad tweet slighted towards Max Crosby, because listen, if this was who's a bad player on the Raiders?
Everyone except Max Crosby.
Let's say Jermaine Illuminor. Let's say, because he's terrible. Let's say Jermaine Illuminor said, I'm not playing for the Raiders anymore after this year if Antonio Pierce is not hired. Well, you know what? Screw you, Jermaine, because you suck. You know what I'm saying? But this is your best player. This is Max Crosby, someone that is going to be in the conversation for Defensive Player of the Year basically every year of his career. You know, he's a fantastic player. His motor is insane. He's the guy. He is the vocal leader of this team. And this is a team with Davante Adams on it, too. So that really is saying something. He's the vocal leader of this team. And I'm assuming if he's coming out and saying these things, that this is the pretty much the mindset of the Raiders locker room as it is.
Yeah.
So why even – but like, Mark Davis seems like the type of guy, the trust fund baby that always wants – the Jim Dolan type of guy who always wants the – you know, the flashy hire, the flashy signing, whatever it may be, whatever it costs, whatever people think about us, we're going to go for. So if he's holding out for Jim Harbaugh, or I never even heard the name Bill Belichick cross the Raiders' mind, but if that's what he's holding out for when he has someone that has proven on-field success, now it's a small sample size, but this is your franchise. It's not like he had a small sample size of success with the Giants. He had the success with the players on your current team. So why not take it and run with it?
Yeah, I think that you know, now that they're in Vegas, I think Mark Davis is trying to act like the Raiders are like the Mecca of the NFL. You know, they got to be like a premier franchise, all the big names. But the roster doesn't look like that. I mean, the roster looks terrible, aside from, you know, two or three standout players. I think what will get you to that level is winning. And you have to stick with what works. And you know, Antonio Pierce beat the Chiefs, like, with you know, with the roster that, whether Mark Davis knows it or not, is not just not very good.
I don't think he knows it.
I truly don't think he knows it either. I mean, I think he thought signing Jimmy Garoppolo was going to make them, like, you know, Super Bowl contenders like the 49ers were.
It made them more handsome.
He did, but then he was on the bench. And so, you know, what does that do for you?
Wait a minute. How have we never talked about Jimmy Garoppolo being in the ASN Hall of Fame?
Oh, that's right. Yeah, he's got to be like one of the first people in there.
He's got to be one of the first. All right, so we have a new – that's nine now. That makes nine people in the ASN Hall
of Fame. That's a pretty solid group.
That is. I mean, no one's touching – the bell of the ball is Mike Leach. Everyone knows that he is the GOAT of the ASN Hall of Fame. Close second is Jim Tomsula.
Jim Tomsula might be coming for his
star. No, we can't. You know why? And this is going to sound mean, but it's because Mike Leach is dead that I think it doesn't touch. Like, listen, first off, if Jim Tomsula died, I'd be devastated. If he ever died, I'd be
devastated. You'd have to have a 10-hour tribute episode.
That we're going to have to make. We're not even going to. I'm just going to go back on every single episode and just take the clips of us talking about him and just make it into a tribute episode. Anyway, I don't want to make this about Jim Tomsula again, but not yet at least. But yeah, all right, Jimmy Garoppolo definitely deserves a spot in the hand. We have different categories of the ASN Hall of Fame. So it's players, coaches, and handsome. And Jimmy Garoppolo is the GOAT of the handsome. So just purely handsome. But getting back to it, you know, the Raiders are a disaster. And yeah, I Jimmy Garoppolo, that signing, I can't, you know what's funny? He hasn't played in so long for the Raiders that I genuinely forgot that was this year that they signed him.
Yeah, they signed him in March.
Like, it felt like it was 2 years ago. It felt like he's on the second year of his deal with them. What do you do with him? Did they just kind of like, hold on to him, I guess, and have a $20 million a year backup.
I guess it depends what the guarantees are. I don't really know what his situation. I don't know if they gave him a deal that actually carries a lot of guarantees into next year.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he'd be a fine. He's a fine backup. You know, I'm not sure that's what he's striving for, but I don't think he would get a starting job.
I think he's perfectly content where he is right now because he has two Super Bowl rings as it is. He's played in a Super Bowl and now he's making millions of dollars to sit on the bench. So I think this is like, what a whirlwind of a career it's been for Jimmy Garoppolo so far. And isn't he only like 32 or 33? Like he's got like at least 5 or 6 more years of playing time left.
Yeah. He's definitely not older than that. He is 32 and he won't be 33 until November.
Okay.
But not to pile on NFL notifications.
No, we can.
I was looking through the tweets. I feel like there was something really egregious that I remembered. I couldn't find it, but I did find his playoff predictions for the wild card round. This is posted on.
What did he go? 0-6.
He went 0-6. This was posted.
Did he go
0-6?
Yes, he
went 0-6. This was posted on. What are we at? Wednesday. This posted on Friday. He had Dolphins over Chiefs, Browns over Texans, Steelers over Bills, Cowboys over Packers, Rams over Lions, Eagles over Buccaneers. And by the way, then he quote tweeted something of his of that he sent on like January 9th. He quote tweeted it a day or two ago. It said that the Texans were going to go to the AFC Championship game. So he's taking that victory lap. But then this tweet from January 12th, you know, the day before the wild card round, says that the Browns were going to beat them, which I guess is an easy way, you know, to do things. You just put out both predictions. But yes, this tweet here, I'm going to send it to you just so, you know, nobody thinks
yeah,
I'm
I gotta take a look at
making it up. We've got Dolphins. Oh, yeah. Dolphins, Browns, Steelers, Cowboys, Rams, and Eagles. That would be an interesting divisional round.
That is just like that is.
It's like, actually it's like a talent, right? I mean, like it's very hard to get all 6 of them wrong.
It is. Even if you tried, like you have to have some kind of logic. Like even if you went 1-for-5 and the one being like, okay, the Bills over the Steelers, like, okay. You know what I mean? Because some of the other, like a lot of them are close. Like I see, just for instance, I got the Browns and the Texans wrong. I thought that the Browns were going to put up a much better fight because that was one of the closer games. And same thing with the Rams and the Lions, you know, 24-23. I had the Rams winning just purely off of playoff experience for the most part. But like those are close ones that you could say, all right, I could see it. But like come on, like really the Steelers over the Bills, like
they tricked themselves into thinking the Steelers were going to win that game.
Yeah, unbelievable. That guy sucks. But I'm gonna look at that right now, actually. But now that we're talking about it, I'm glad that you kind of mentioned it. I do want to talk about games like the Dolphins and the Chiefs, for instance. I don't necessarily want to talk so much about the game as I want to talk about the game plan and the fallout of the game itself. So before we started recording, Dan and I were talking about how bad this game made Tua Tagovailoa look. And not only that, how it seems like there's either a disconnect or a distrust between Mike McDaniels and Tua in terms of throwing the football, because I mean, even on the long touchdown pass to Tyreek Hill, all Trent McDuffie had to do, he panicked. All he had to do was just turn around and pick the ball off because it was severely underthrown. Like he loaded up. It looked like he was going to shoot a cannon out of his arm. And it went 35 yards. Like it was a horrendous throw. And Tyreek Hill, just being an amazing wide receiver, just kind of adjusted to it. And then he did the rest, but maybe that's all Mike McDaniels needed to see. To be like, whoa, he really can't throw the football in this weather. But maybe it could be the weather. But Dan, me and you were in lockstep about this before we recorded. It was rough to watch.
Yeah,
the Dolphins just throw like 78 screen passes.
Yeah, in a game where they trailed by 2 possessions for the entire second half. Yeah, I mean, even if you're not confident in some big plays. With Tua, I mean, I think you have to at least try them. You know, like what's the difference between turning the ball over downfield or, you know, just playing for, you know, punt, you know, better field position when you punt? I mean, the game where you're down 2 possessions. you know, a turnover is a turnover, even if it's a, you know, turnover on downs.
Yeah.
At that point in the game, you need points, and you're not going to get points by throwing behind the line of scrimmage on plays that, you know, are clearly going nowhere for you. I think, of course, they were at a disadvantage playing in that kind of weather. And honestly, the reason why, if everything was even, I probably would have picked the Dolphins in maybe a defensive game, but everything wasn't even because the defense was missing, I don't know, 5-6 starters. I mean, you know, Andrew Van Ginkle was out.
What a name.
Javon Holland, you know, all those guys. They had no pass rushers. Bradley Chubb, Jalen Phillips, both out for the season. There are definitely, one or two more that I'm not thinking of. I think they lost two starters during that. I think Jerome Baker, right? Was he out? Did he injure himself in week 18 against the Bills?
Yeah.
They lost so many guys. It was almost impressive that they held them to 26 points. Although, you know, I know maybe the freezing weather had something to do with that. It was almost impressive that the defense is able to do what it could, because they were constantly bringing pressure, but they weren't able to get to Mahomes because they were running out guys who were 35 years old. like Bruce Irvin and Justin Houston and Melvin Ingram.
I know. It was like they literally just like opened up the floodgates from the retirement home.
Like those guys literally all peaked in like 2016. And this was their pass rushers against Patrick Mahomes. And, you know, so I think Vic Fangio's response was to constantly bring pressure. And to be honest, they got pressure, but they never touched him. Like they just weren't able to really bring him down because these guys are old and they can't really finish the plays like they once did. And then of course doing that leaves you vulnerable on the back end. So then, you know, Patrick Mahomes kind of had his way with the depleted secondary. Xavien Howard, another guy who I forgot to mention, he was out. So it was just Jalen Ramsey and, you know, and a bunch of nobodies on that defense and Zach Sealer. I'm almost surprised that the Chiefs weren't able to score more than 26, which is why I don't think we really know for sure whether their offensive issues are solved yet. I guess we'll find out a little bit more in Buffalo. But what's still disappointing about the loss for the Dolphins is the offense. Like that's a group where you had almost everybody healthy. I mean, you missed a couple people on the offensive line, but you know, you had Jalen Waddle back, you had Raheem Mostert back. I mean, the fact you couldn't even have a running game between Mostert and Achane is very disappointing.
I think Achane had 6 carries for 9 yards or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and credit goes to the Chiefs defense. They've had a great defense all year. They're healthy too. The defense is almost completely healthy, which is very rare this time of year. But it's just very disappointing that, you know, Mike McDaniel, the offensive genius, couldn't put anything together. Besides that one play to Tyreek Hill that they seem to have once a game.
And that was purely
the fact that nothing else could come together, especially on a weekend when, you know, Matt LaFleur had an amazing weekend as a play caller. Bobby Slowick, the Texans offensive coordinator, lit up the Browns. Like there were offensive play callers were winning this weekend. Johnson, 3 consecutive 75-yard touchdown drives to start the game. I'll give credit to the Rams for adjusting, but you know, like the Dolphins never even had that. Like the scripted first drive flamed out in like 4 plays.
Yeah.
So it was a very disappointing game for McDaniel. I saw some people say, and I kind of agree with it, although it's not so easy, that maybe Mike McDaniel should Jared Goff to do what Sean McVay did and say, well, you've served your purpose, and we are, in order for me to keep my job and win a Super Bowl, we're going to move on and upgrade, even though you are in a starting caliber quarterback. The only problem is that, the Matthew Staffords of the world don't become available every offseason. So it's not as easy as
straight
it
up.
Sounds.
Dak for Tua, straight up. Let's go.
Lateral move.
No, I don't know. I think Dak is better than Tua.
I would trust Dak over Tua. Yeah. But I guess when you think about it, you know, how highly was Stafford viewed before he ended up in LA? He was viewed kind of like Dak. I mean,
he was viewed as the guy that was never going to be able to really like.
Right.
He was just a gunslinger that didn't care about throwing interceptions. And I kind of feel like that's
a good quarterback, a little bit turnover prone. And he was somebody who could take you to the playoffs, but he hadn't proven he could win there. But the Rams thought, you know, well, with our system and our resources and our offense, he can. And they were right. Yeah. So, yeah, maybe, you know, maybe if the right situation comes up. Look, I think the Dolphins next year, even with Tua, are in a great situation. Because like I said, if if they have more than, you know, if they're not missing three quarters of their defense, I think they can win games defensively. Like, that's a really good group they have.
Yeah, it is.
It's an, especially if Vic Fangio sticks around. I have no reason to believe he wouldn't. You know, like, they got a lot of breakout guys this year. Zach Sealer had a surprisingly great year. Andrew Van Ginkel continues to get better. You know, Jalen Ramsey actually looked
incredible.
I thought maybe he would start to, you know, drop off a little bit. He actually improved after last year. He looked better. So I think they can win games with that defense, which is why, you know, you may not need an elite quarterback. And, you know, maybe even in the right situation, like if you got the one seed, which is not impossible, you know, then maybe Tua can get you to the Super Bowl because you don't have to play in a tough environment. And we all know Super Bowls are played in a pretty easy environment too. So I'm not all out on the Dolphins. I'm not even all out on Tua, but you put yourself in a position where it's like almost you can't go on the road in the playoffs. Otherwise, you kind of are in a situation where you're just gonna flop.
Yeah, I agree. Couple things. One, I think that first, it really looked like from the first quarter that the Dolphins didn't really even want to be there. It looked like they had wanted no part of the game itself. And I think Kansas City kind of reflected that because I don't think 26 points to me doesn't tell the whole story of the game. I feel like the Chiefs could have easily dropped at least 40 points on the defense if they wanted to. But the way that I kind of see it was like, well, if they're phoning it in, we're just going to do what we have to do to move the chains, kill the clock, and just win this game in the easiest manner possible. And that's kind of really what they did. I don't think they really – it sounds crazy, but I don't really think they prioritized scoring. I just think they kind of wanted to kill the clock and just kind of keep the drives going and just kind of get the hell out of there, as it looked like the Dolphins wanted to do too. Another thing that I'm looking for next year for the Dolphins is if Frank Smith gets a coaching opportunity somewhere else, I'm very curious to see what the offense is going to look like, because – will they have a Eagles type of fall off where it's, oh, you know, like Shane Steichen goes to the Colts and it really turned out that Shane Steichen was the mastermind behind the Eagles offense. It really seems like, I don't think that that's necessarily the case because Mike McDaniel is a good play caller in his own right, but Smith is a very highly coveted offensive coordinator. So it'll be interesting to see what happens there. Same thing with Bobby Slowick, same thing with Ben Johnson. How are these offenses? Also, Bobby Slowick was my dark horse to take over for the Alabama job. I really wanted that to happen. I thought that would have been cool. I think
a lot of people wanted D'Amico Ryan. It's not that I don't think he would ever consider leaving. You know,
no, but
Alabama is a big job. And then in that case, Bobby Slowick could have taken over for him.
That's about, but I'm thinking a coordinator would have, like, it would have made a little bit more sense if, like, a coordinator, yes, that hasn't gotten a chance to. That's why I was like, well, Bobby Slowick's been fantastic this year. And, you know, same thing with Ben Johnson, but Ben Johnson really seems like he's going to get, you know, a pretty solid NFL job.
Yeah, but I think either Carolina or Washington probably.
Oh, man, I really hope he doesn't go to Carolina. That would just be awful. But well,
apparently the Commanders were, like, all over him. I, you know, I don't know if that's going to
– yeah.
It honestly doesn't seem like – I mean, not to deviate too much, but it doesn't seem like the Commanders are running, like, as active of a coaching search as other teams. Part of that is they just brought in a GM, but I also wonder if they've kind of made up their mind that he's their target. But yeah. Anyway.
But, yeah, I think kind of in a grand scheme of things, I'm very interested to see how all those teams do without the offensive coordinator, which Ben Johnson's definitely going to get a job. Not sure about Bobby Slowick yet. Not sure about Frank Smith. But if Frank Smith is to leave and get a coaching job somewhere else, I thought he'd be really good in LA for the Chargers. Same thing with Bobby Slowick. He was one of the guys, and I put out an article a few weeks ago about, like, I didn't even have Jim Harbaugh on there because I was pretty certain that he was going to stay in college because I didn't think Michigan was going to win the Natty. So I thought if he had an opportunity again to win it, I think he would have. But Slowick was one of my top candidates over there. Same thing with Frank Smith and Ben Johnson. And Brian Callahan was someone that I thought too, the Cincinnati Bengals offensive coordinator, because he really showed something this year, because his best quarterback on the roster, Joe Burrow, was out and Jake Browning took over and actually looked pretty good. So a lot of teams probably took notice about that as well. But getting back to it, it's going to be, I feel like we're setting ourselves up for, remember how a couple off seasons ago, it was like the craziest off season in NFL history.
Yep.
I feel like this year is going to be even crazier. I really do, because there's a lot of good teams that have a lot of talent that are playoff teams that have uncertainties at the head coaching spot and at quarterback. And I think we're going to see a little bit of a quarterback carousel with the best quarterback class in the draft that we've seen in quite some time too. It's going to be really interesting how all these quarterback moves are made. But moving on from the Dolphins, I do want to talk about, we mentioned it before, Dak. I want to mention, talk about the Dallas Cowboys. Again, not so much the game, but just the sheer disappointment. You have to think that Mike McCarthy is canned, right? He has to be fired at this point.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, all reporting was kind of indicating that if they didn't, you know, make the kind of playoff run that Jerry Jones wanted, that would probably be the change. And obviously, it was even more embarrassing than anything they could have imagined, I think. So, you know, we're sitting here on Wednesday. There still hasn't been a move made. So I don't know if that means anything. You know, apparently they're reporting saying that a lot of, you know, the players are still very vocal about their support of him. But you know, when that came out, I tweeted, I was like, well, you know, at some point their support has to be shown on the field. Like, you know, like, oh, the tweet was like, oh, they're, you know, they're definitely fighting for him. Like, well, why didn't they fight for him on Sunday? I mean, cause that was a flat performance. Like, it's not like, oh, we lost a tough one against a hot team. Like, you were getting pulverized. I mean, it took some garbage time scoring for the score to look just okay. You know, they were completely outclassed. So I mean, they weren't fighting for him on the field, no matter what way you put it.
Yeah, fighting doesn't even seem like embarrassment, fighting, all those terms seem completely off, because this is a team that I'm pretty sure, was it? I know that they were undefeated at home this year. Last year, they only lost, like, what, one game at home?
Yeah, I think it was at the very beginning of the year. So I think they had won 16 straight at home.
Yeah, I mean, all the chips were stacked up against Green Bay. And now, kind of flipping over to Green Bay, not even really talking so much about Dak, just mentioning this, is that how much more confidence do Green Bay Packers fans have in Matt LaFleur now? Because it was like, well, you know, his whole career so far as the coach was with Aaron Rodgers, you know, he's able to pull off these great comebacks. That was probably one of the most impressive performances I've seen all around from a team, because man, did he have those guys ready to play. I mean, he had them with the blinders completely on. It was like, we don't care where we are. We don't care who we're playing. We don't care who the owner is. We're going to come in here and we're going to play our game. And that's exactly what they did. And that is just so admirable. And that really, like, I never really had that much, like, I had confidence in LaFleur as a head coach, because the proof is in the pudding on the field. But like, he just gained so many more respect points for me, because I was just like, man, like, he could have easily went in there, rolled over and died, and no one would have batted an eye. We would have been like, well, it's, you know, they had the world stacked against them.
Yeah.
It was in Dallas against an offensive juggernaut. Of course they were going to lose. But now it's like, oh my God, they went into Dallas. They destroyed the Dallas Cowboys defense and made Dak look like Zach Wilson. So, you know, how much more impressive does it get?
Yeah. And yeah, what they've done with that offense is incredible, because we talked about it here. You know, when they were starting to show something with Jordan Love and the offense starting to show something, we said, well, you know, now they just need to get a legitimate number one receiver. But I have to say, like, whether it's LaFleur or it's Love or it's both of them, they're making every single one of those receivers look good. Like, you know, Jaden Reed looks great. Dontavian Wicks, who's a, you know, a rookie fifth rounder. He looks great.
How about Bo Melton, seventh rounder.
Romeo Doubs. I didn't see a Cowboys defender near him the other day. You know, the way he was able to get separation. All these receivers. I know Christian Watson had a little bit of a disappointing year. He's been on and off the field, but everybody else looks like a part of the future in Green Bay, you know, whether they add somebody or not. Like, it's just a great sign for them that whether it's LaFleur or it's Love or it's both, they are making these guys, you know, who were drafted in the third round, the fifth round, all that, look like legitimate NFL starting caliber, you know, wide receivers. When like you said, the deck is kind of stacked against them, especially with a, you know, quarterback who's in his first year as a starter. Jordan Love's going to be around for a long time.
Yeah,
we're going to look back on this wild card weekend one day and say, well, that is when, you know, that's when Jordan Love and CJ Stroud really launched their careers. Obviously, CJ Stroud had an amazing year. Jordan Love had a great year too. But this was when they really announced themselves to the world. Like, you know, we're not just cool stories. Like, we are legitimate franchise quarterbacks who are going to be around for a very long time and who can hang with the best in the NFL.
I don't know if people will agree with this or not, but I said throughout the season, I still will stand on the hill that I think that out of anyone in a wide open MVP race, the MVP should be CJ Stroud. I will stand on that hill. I know it's not going to happen. It's going to be Lamar Jackson, but I'll stand on that 100%. And the coach of the year should be D'Amico Ryans. I'll stand on that too. A lot of people are going to say Kevin Stefanski, and I get that because of all the adversity and all that. I fully support that as well. But I mean, it's not out of the realm of possibility to say that I think at least going into next year, these performances in the playoffs have cemented CJ Stroud and Jordan Love as top 10 quarterbacks in my eyes going into next year.
Yeah, I mean, they're playing like it. And remember, this was the year where quarterback play wasn't spectacular. I mean, I don't think it's really on the quarterbacks. I think we've talked about this here too. The breakdown of offensive lines has been probably the bigger issue. But yeah, in a year where it seems like, you know, a good amount of guys have taken a step back or you know, or just been injured, these two have looked like stars. And Jordan Love is especially impressive because he had a rough patch in October. You know, like they lost 3 out of 4 or something like that. He was becoming a little bit turnover prone. And then ever since then, from November on, he looked dominant. So I think the way he improved, especially with a supporting cast, like we said, not the absolute greatest. He also didn't have Aaron Jones for a good portion of the year. The way he kind of just took ownership of that and improved was remarkable. I mean, you know, CJ Stroud from day one was really good. Jordan Love actually, you know, had to do some heavy lifting and improve himself.
Yeah.
And he did that. They're both very impressive. They're both going to be around for a long time. I mean, look, we found out with Trevor Lawrence and the Jaguars this year compared to last year, it's not as simple as like, oh, well, you have your franchise quarterback, you're going to be good forever now. Like, you know, the Texans shouldn't take this for granted and assume they're going to be back, you know, winning every single year. It's not so easy, but it's definitely a good sign for both franchises. They're both well coached, which I think is a huge part of it, a huge part of why they're going to be around for a long time. I'm wondering, you know, if I want to hear your thoughts on whether you think either one of them though has a chance to advance this weekend.
Yeah, I do
because they're both. I think that they're both 9.5-point underdogs, which is significant. Like you usually don't see an underdog bigger than that in the divisional round, except for maybe the Giants last year.
I think that not only does one have an opportunity, I think they both do, and this is from someone that filled out their NFL playoff bracket as having the Super Bowl matchup being the 49ers versus the Ravens. You know, the Ravens the 49ers defense in the second half of the season was completely different than the first half. Now, I know the offense has really kind of taken over as the, you know, the focal point of the team. I mean, looking virtually unstoppable. And I get that, but not only did Green Bay stop a virtually unstoppable offense last week in a super tough environment, they also put up a ton of points on a really good defense. So I don't really see the appeal of saying that the 49ers are going to blow out the Packers, because I think that out of the two opponents, if there was a team that would have a better chance of blowing out the Packers, it was probably going to be the Cowboys. I think this is going to be a much closer game. I'm not going to say that they're going to win. I think that they have a huge opportunity to win. And on the other side, let's just get this out here. CJ Stroud already has the same amount of playoff passing touchdowns as Lamar Jackson. And he has one game under his belt. So that's just something to throw out there. I mean, let's face it. Lamar Jackson, amazing player, probably going to be a two-time MVP. Hasn't really shown it in the playoffs so far in his career. And I'm not saying that he can't show it on, you know, this weekend, but they're facing a team that is not only red hot, but they have the confidence and they have no fear because they have nothing to lose. This is a team that is probably 2 years ahead of schedule right now, I would say. I was thinking they were probably going to be like 5-12, 6-11 this year with a lot of promise. Next year, they just miss out on the playoffs. And then 2 years from now is where you say, yes, this is when they're going to be the perennial playoff team. Now they already look like a perennial playoff team and a I don't want to say juggernaut. That's not what I'm going for. But like a team that looks like they can make deep runs every single year. Like this is a genuinely good football team. And it's funny because they have so many holes on the defensive side still, and they're still performing really, really well. I think that they both have a path to victory 100%. I think both games are going to be a lot closer than those spreads, even though tough environments to play in. Baltimore, San Francisco, both really tough environments to play in. And let's not forget about the weird Matt LaFleur, Kyle Shanahan rivalry that they have that going on there. So there's a little,
you know what though? That's why I'm a little bit concerned for the Packers, because Kyle Shanahan has kind of walked circles around Matt LaFleur in the playoffs. Yeah. So the first time they played in the playoffs was the NFC title game 2019. The 49ers had the better team, but they destroyed them. I mean, that was a game that was over pretty early. And then, you know, last time they faced off in the playoffs in like 10 degrees in Green Bay, the Packers were the better team. I mean, they were the one seed. They were the clear favorites to go to the Super Bowl. And the 49ers, who were the sixth and had Jimmy Garoppolo, kind of went in there and shut them down. I'm a little bit concerned about the play calling mismatch between Kyle Shanahan's offense and Joe Barry's defense. It could be a situation where, like, okay, Jordan Love played very well against a good 49ers defense, but I could just see Kyle Shanahan, like, you know, just
scoring 49 points against Joe Barry's defense.
I mean, I could see him walking all over Joe Barry.
Hey, listen, Joe Barry has some confidence now.
He scripts the beginning of games so well that, yeah, I'm afraid that, you know, if the Packers find themselves in like a 14-0 hole, you know, I don't know if they're going to be able to come back from that against, yeah, the 49ers defense as good as Jordan Love is. But, you know, I feel like the other way around, though, we still don't know, are the 49ers built to come back from a deficit? So, you know, what if this is almost a situation where if I'm the Packers and I win the coin toss, I want the ball first.
Yeah, you want to try and score first.
I want to try to put them in a hole.
Look at what they did against Dallas. They did the same thing. They took the wind. First off, it was a long-winded drive.
Yeah.
Completely took the wind out of the sails of the crowd, out of the Cowboys offense. It really deflated everything. And I think that was a huge – it's funny how you – like, turning point before Dallas even touches the ball, but it really was, because what if they go 3-and-out on that first drive? How different is the football game? I think it's a world of difference. I really do.
Yeah, like we want to. If I'm the Packers, I want to try to put them in a hole. We're going to force Brock Purdy to lead his team back, and if he does, which honestly we don't know if he can, I would say he probably can against Joe Barry's defense. But you know, make him put the pressure on him, because he hasn't faced that kind of pressure really in the NFL with how much winning they've done.
You know what else I'm thinking too? This might sound crazy, but considering how thin the 49ers secondary is right now, I don't know if they have the personnel to match up with just the volume of offensive weapons that the Packers have. I mean, you're looking at, I mean, anyone could pop off at any time. You have Christian Watson, Bo Melton, Dontavian Wicks. You have Jaden Reed, Tucker Kraft, Luke Musgrave, Aaron Jones. You know what I mean? Like, there's a lot of offensive weapons that could pop off at any time here. And just saying, like, it's not completely out of the realm of possibility to say, all right, well, if we shut down Jaden Reed, you know, who knows? Christian Watson can go off.
Yeah. Teams that make deep runs in the playoffs tend to have it tends to be more about having a lot of weapons than great weapons.
Yeah.
And, you know, the Patriots are an example of that. You know, all those years where they may not, you know, maybe Julian Edelman was their top weapon. Of course, Gronk was hit. Gronk was there sometimes. Sometimes he just wasn't healthy for the playoffs. You know, there were those two, but they had a lot of depth. And, yeah. You know, you look at other teams that have won in the playoffs, they have a lot of depth. I think maybe the Rams are a bit of an exception the year of, you know, Cooper Kupp. He had a billion yards that year. But, like, look at the Chiefs last year. I mean, you know, they had no clear number one receiver. There was Travis Kelce, I'll give him that. But in terms of wide receivers, you know, they had about five or six guys that Patrick Mahomes is throwing to. And it was hard for defenses to keep up with all of them. I mean, Kadarius Toney was catching passes in the Super Bowl, and it was working because the Eagles had so many guys to try to keep up with. And the Packers are like that, where, you know, these guys may not be stars yet, although I think Jaden Reed is very good and Dontavian Wicks is very underrated, but, you know, they're not Tyreek Hill's Devontae Adams of the world. But it's hard for defenses to keep track of them. And the interesting thing about the 49ers is they've got those four weapons, you know, McCaffrey and Ayuk and Deebo Samuel and George Kittle. They really don't have anything else besides those four.
Yeah.
And, you know, you could say,
well, how dare you disrespect Juwan Jennings?
Yeah. Well, that's the only really, that's the only name that comes to mind. I probably couldn't even name you anybody else.
How dare you disrespect game. Ray McLeod?
Yeah. Okay.
I can go on.
Where you wonder, you know, if that's going to come up where maybe they don't have the depth. But as long as the four of them are healthy, you know, it's just hard to stop that group. But I do wonder if one gets banged up or, you know, if defenses find a way to really zero in on one of them or two of them, you know, if that's going to be the difference. Because so many teams that go deep in the playoffs have just a bunch of options. They may not be elite options, but they're a bunch of options. The 49ers, they've got their guys, and then there's really nothing outside of them. I don't really trust Joe Barry to be the guy to contain one or two of them. But, you know, maybe somebody does along the way.
Joe Barry, that's the advantage incoming.
That's the advantage for the 49ers. It's like, oh, well, the other three teams in the NFC don't have very good, you know, they have some troubling pass defenses. Like the Lions, we know they have some issues there. You know, you get Brandon Ayuk or Deebo Samuel against Cam Sutton and it might be over. And then the Buccaneers have improved. They've got Antoine Winfield, who's great. But they've had some times this year where the right pass defenses have kind of shredded them, although they have improved. So, you know, the 49ers may have a favorable path the rest of the way. How fun would a Lions and Packers NFC championship be, though?
That would be great. How fun would the Buccaneers – like, first off, the Baker Mayfield redemption arc – of 2023-24 is like, to me, Damar Hamlin died on a football field. And I want to talk more about Baker Mayfield than Damar Hamlin. Like, that should tell you the renaissance of the Baker Mayfield experience this year. I mean, literally, it seems like, and I don't want to say, because, you know, Baker was a guy that could talk that talk and sometimes walk that walk.
Yeah.
Now he's not talking at all, and he's just putting up performances. He's just performing now. And the crazy thing about the other day, too, is look at the performers. David Moore, Trey Palmer, you know what I mean? These guys, they weren't even used. I mean, Mike Evans had like three catches, I'm pretty sure. You know, they weren't even using their main guys. That's what makes this so scary for me, for Detroit. And it goes both ways. This seems like it's going to be like a 48-45 game between these two teams, because I'm pretty sure they met once before this year, and I think Detroit got out to a pretty big lead. I don't think the same case. I don't think it's going to happen again. This offense is rolling right now. I know it's crazy just saying 2 weeks ago they scored 9 points against the Tampa, the Carolina Panthers, but this offense seems to be rolling right now and clicking very well. And like you said, I'll take my chances with anyone over Cam Sutton. So. If I'm looking at a Hall of Fame wide receiver and Mike Evans lining up against Cam Sutton, I'm taking that matchup 10 times out of 10. That's something that could literally change a game. Same thing, like, I love Brian Branch. I think he's a great player. I'm taking a Chris Godwin matchup over Brian Branch probably any day of the week. You know what I'm saying? Like, this is a team that just might not match up that well. I hate to say it, but I don't like picking against the same team 2 weeks in a row, especially in the playoffs. I think the Bucs might just have the slight edge over the Detroit Lions in this one. I really do. Baker's balling right now. Baker don't give a shit, and I love that.
What makes it tough is They're an extremely streaky team,
mm-hmm.
the Buccaneers. So you almost don't know week to week which one you're getting.
But Goff is a very streaky player too. That's
the thing. He is. But you know, like the Lions beat them 20-6 last time in Tampa. Like there have been moments, and honestly, the last 2 weeks of the year weren't very good. There have been moments where that offense looks pretty bad, and then there are other times where the offense looks, you know, almost unstoppable with the way, you know, like when they played the Jaguars and the Packers. I think those are back-to-back weeks. I mean, they look like one of the best offenses in the NFL. Baker Mayfield tore them up. And it wasn't just Mike Evans either. Chris Godwin was putting up huge numbers. I mean, the whole operation was working. And so, you know, it's like, which one are you going to get? And against Cam Sutton and, you know, in that secondary, you would think you'd get the good version. But the last time they didn't. They played them really well, the Lions. Aaron Glenn seemed to know what he was doing, or it's just an example of the Buccaneers being extremely streaky. So we'll see if that carries onto the road. You know, honestly, I think Baker Mayfield would feed off of that, playing on the road and, you know, in a tough environment. He seems like a guy who does play better in big games. You remember they almost beat the Chiefs in the divisional round. When he made the playoffs with the Browns. Really more on the defense, I think, than Baker. But Baker did, you know, he did enough to keep them in that game. So, you know, on one hand, the offense at its peak can really hang with the Lions. On the other hand, yeah. we almost don't know which offense you're going to get, which makes them, you know, a tough team to predict. And
yeah.
you always know. I think that Goff is streaky, but the Lions, with the running game, they always seem to put up points, no matter who they're playing.
That's what I was going to say. It all just comes down to how well the Buccaneers. Now, it's funny because this is a Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde type of defense, because 1 week you'll give up 450 passing yards, but they're still, I'm pretty sure, the third or fourth ranked defensive unit in terms of against the run.
Yeah, they've continued to have a good run defense.
So, and they should, I mean, that's know, obviously led by Vita Vea, Levante David, guys like that are just dogs, Devin White, all those kind of dudes. But I think that's going to be key. If they could limit, to be quite honest with you, I don't know how confident I'd be if the Buccaneers come in to Detroit and completely shut down the run game. On a scale of 1 to 10, Dan, completely shut them down. I mean, they're getting like 1 to 2 yards per carry, right? They're just keeping them honest at this point. How confident out of a scale of 1 to 10 are you in Jared Goff's ability to win a football game purely off of his arm? He's destined for mistakes. I mean, we've seen it time and time again. He's going to make a couple of those boneheaded throws where Tampa Bay could take advantage of.
Yeah, well, it depends what kind of game they get themselves into. You know, if they're trailing by a lot, I think, you know, you're right to have a little concern about that. You know, if you're in a close battle where the running game isn't working, and so, you need to go to the passing game, it's more about confidence in the whole offense than just Jared Goff. Because honestly, I saw some stat, and I won't pretend to remember exactly what it was, but it was like, you know, his depth of target, like, you know, how far he was throwing the ball was, you know, one of the shortest, really in any playoff game.
It's been like that his entire career.
But that's almost why I have confidence in them to still win that way, because they do find success that way. Like, it's not like, oh, you know, he's just, they're afraid to unleash him, and because of that, the offense is suffering. Well, I think the offense has done pretty well with that system. You know, Ben Johnson knows how to get it to a point that he keeps Jared Goff within his range, and yet they still move the ball. Like, you know, last week, even with that being said, he did a great job of getting the ball to Amon-Ra St. Brown. They did a great job of getting the ball to Sam Laporta.
Amon-Ra St. Brown.
Josh Reynolds at the beginning was having a huge game. So in a game where Jared Goff isn't taking shots, they find a way to really move the ball in the passing game. So, you know, unless they're in a real deficit where they've got to just throw bombs downfield and do anything they can to score, I think they can win in kind of a shootout. And it's just not the way, you know, it's just not the shootout that you would think, where they're, you know, bombing it downfield, Amon-Ra St. Brown. It's more about getting 15 or 20 yards, you know, at a time, and just, you know, kind of like that last drive against the Cowboys a couple weeks ago, where, you know, you got everything working. The offensive line is protecting him well.
It was also the worst defensive scheme I've ever seen.
It was.
That was the softest baby shit defensive scheme
It was, and then, you know, Dan Quinn seemed to keep that up against the Packers. So, you know, I don't know what to think about yeah, that drive.
But my favorite thing that I saw the other day, it was like, we've interviewed Dan Quinn for the opening of our head coaching spot. It was like the Seattle Seahawks. And I'm like, really? You really want to? I know two games, anyone could have a bad two games. Look at Aaron Glenn's first seven games of last year. How the hell did he even still have a job, you know? Yeah. And then he turned it around to be really decent. And it's like, how – that's got to be bittersweet. Like, imagine they lined that up beforehand. They were like, yeah, absolutely, we're going to interview Dan Quinn. And then, like – and then Green Bay drops 48, and they're like, you know what? Well, we're going to have to reschedule this. We'll see what else we got. But, yeah, I don't know. I just – I want to believe in Jared Goff so bad. But then you just think about, like, some of the boneheaded mistakes he's made throughout the course of the year. And one game that just always stands out to me is just that terrible performance against the Chicago Bears at home, where they somehow, like, came, you know, like, the Bears just being the Bears completely gave the game, like, right back to them at the end. But yeah, they got away with that one for sure. And that was at home too. Jared Goff is also a very different player at home than he is on the road. So it's a massive advantage for the Detroit Lions to have this game at home. I'd really feel a lot worse about the Lions if it was in Tampa. But I think at the end of the day, I think that the Detroit Lions will win. I think it's going to be a lot closer than people think, because people just keep counting out this Tampa Bay Buccaneers team every single week, and they just keep putting dog-like performances together. And I think this is going to be I think that'll be the best game of the weekend.
I hope so. I mean, we need to it's the most fun. Like, when I look at that schedule, you know, me and you, like, the more casual fans are like, oh yeah, Bills Chiefs, like, that's, you know, that could be the next, you know, Brady Manning rivalry, Allen and Mahomes. But, you know, for us, like, we like these unusual matchups that you would not, you know, you wouldn't expect in this round. And Lions Buccaneers is definitely one of those where it's like, you know, you expect this more on like a Sunday at 1 o'clock than on a divisional weekend.
Yeah.
So it's going to be fun. Hopefully it's a close game. You know, the same way you say, you know, the Baker Mayfield is kind of built for this moment, and, you know, they're a team, you know, they've got that dog in them, right? They like, you could tell they're built for the playoffs. I think the Lions are too. I mean, I think they showed it. They got into a close game, where, you know, everything seemed to be turning against them in the fourth quarter, and they still won it. So I don't think they're, you know, the Buccaneers won't have the luxury of facing a team that is soft like the Eagles, because unfortunately that's what the Eagles were at the end of the year. They were a soft team, I think, both physically and mentally, because I think they were pretty much checked out. I think they're going to be facing a different beast here in Detroit, especially with the fans, you know, behind the Lions too. So they're probably not a team I would pick, but we've seen surprises already in the playoffs, and, you know, Baker Mayfield seems like he rises to the occasion. So it should be fun.
Now, probably the most anticipated matchup of the weekend. We haven't even thought about the Buffalo Bills and the Kansas City Chiefs. Now, I will be honest with you. I'll be quite frank. I feel like this is a much more watered down version of this rivalry than we've seen in years past. I feel like both teams are kind of, it's crazy to say, and I don't mean this in the way that it'll sound, but like, the Bills seem like a team that it's either this year or bust for them, because there is a massive offseason coming up for them.
I've kind of changed my mind on that.
No, I still think it's a massive offseason for them. It really is.
Well, it's a big offseason, but I've kind of changed my mind on the idea that the window is really starting to close this year. I feel like they have crafted the offense now in a way where Stephon Diggs doesn't have to be the centerpiece of it.
Yeah, but what happens if Stephon Diggs is not there next year?
That's the thing, is like, his role is much more replaceable. If, you know, when you find a way to not rely on him as a 1,400-yard guy, I mean, the running game, you know, the offensive line looked solid this year. It stayed very healthy, which is, you know, you can't bank on that every year. But they found a way to get the running game involved. I think they have a lot of great complementary pieces in the offense. Gabe Davis is hit or miss, of course. Khalil Shakir, I think, should be used more.
Gabe Davis is also someone that's a free agent this year too.
But I really think that two tight end offense is something that they can work with.
Cool 12 personnel action
between Dalton Kincaid and Dawson Knox. Dalton Kincaid is special. I really like watching
him. Yeah, play. He's great. He is.
So I don't know. Maybe you can find a way to put an offense together where you heavily emphasize the running game. You maybe don't have a legitimate number one receiver, but you have a lot of options, kind of like we talked about with the Packers. And you continue to build up the offensive line. And, then maybe you keep Joe Brady around, which is important. Mm-hmm. And then maybe you have something. Because honestly, the defense, they've done a good job of replacing guys. Like Terrell Bernard, who unfortunately, he got lucky. Yeah. That it's not he was carted off and it's only an ankle sprain, but that would be a big loss if they don't have it this week. Terrell Bernard has played very well after losing Tremaine Edmonds. Rasul Douglas.
Matt Milano,
who has been missing the whole year because he got hurt in October. Rasul Douglas has played. He was an amazing acquisition. Teron Johnson's been pretty good. I feel like they've found enough gems that I wonder if maybe they could piece this together, and contend for a Super Bowl for a few more years than we thought.
It's not so much I'm worried about. I'm not really worried about the offense. Even if the Bills go into next year a more 12 personnel team and they don't have Stephon Diggs or Gabe Davis, I'm not necessarily worried about the offense because you have Josh Allen. You have someone that is going to – the Bills took the least amount of sacks as a team in the NFL. And let's be clear, it's not because of the offensive line. Is the offensive line good? It is. But Josh Allen is just that good at escaping pressure as well. So it made the offensive line look that much better. I'm not worried about the offense. The offense is always going to be around that level where Josh Allen's probably going to be around 40 total touchdowns every single year that he's healthy. I'm not worried about it. The defense is what I'm really worried about. The defensive line from top to bottom has far too many holes. Has a lot of free agents coming up as well. Same thing. Secondary is getting older. This is what I'm talking about here. The defensive line is the thing that scares me the absolute most, is between still having to pay the Von Miller contract, which was an absolute disaster of a contract. Greg Rousseau he's a good player, but he has not lived up to the first round expectations. He's not someone that I'm going to build my defensive line around. He's a good run-stopping defensive end that will occasionally get sacks. That's not someone I'm building a defensive line around. The interior at Oliver is good. Everything else is pretty much up in the air. And that's tough. And they're paying a lot of money to a lot of people. And that's what's kind of concerning me. And what happens with Trey White when he comes back? How good is he going to be? Two devastating injuries back-to-back, and that's your number one guy. Micah Hyde is older. Jordan Poyer is older going into the last year.
The safety duo is a problem because they both kind of took a little bit of a step back.
Yeah. I mean, Poyer is still – Micah Hyde definitely took a step back, but Poyer's still going to be – if he's not getting the interception totals, he's still at least going to be a really good run-defending safety. So that's still sustainable for the next couple of years at least if he signs again in the offseason. But I'm a little worried about the defense to – going into next year. Same thing kind of sort of with at least the weapons, but the offense I feel like is always going to be at least fairly decent or top half for sure with just purely off of Josh Allen. I'm not even taking into account Dalton Kincaid and Dawson Knox and James Cook, Khalil Shakir, whatever it may be, just purely off of Josh Allen. It's at least going to be top 16, probably top 10.
I thought Sean McDermott did a good job of keeping that defense together, playing well this year.
Sean McDermott, with the words of Al-Qaeda.
Undefeated, by the way, since that report came out.
Dude, that's got to be one of the funniest reports of the entire season.
I mean, could you imagine they don't lose again after that? And that would be an all-time story. But he did, by the way, Leslie Frazier left as defensive coordinator and he didn't hire anybody. Sean McDermott said, I'm going to take on those duties. Honestly, the defense looks better than it did. And that's with Tre'Davious White getting hurt again. Matt Milano, who's a huge part of that defense, going down really early in the year. Daquan Jones also got hurt early in the year. And then Von Miller just never turned into anything. He came back and he didn't make an impact. So I've been impressed with the way that they've been able to sustain everything. And like I said, part of that is Terrell Bernard breaking out. Teron Johnson, solid year. Rasul Douglas, huge, made a big impact as soon as they got him from Green Bay. Leonard Floyd has done a good job. It's kind of a low cost addition, yeah, knowing that Von Miller wouldn't be ready for the start of the year. So I'm confident, you know, the personnel is one thing, but I do think Sean McDermott's done a really good job of holding that group together and having them continue to play well. Because for a little bit, you know, when the offense was scuffling, defense is keeping them in those games. That offers some hope if they can make the books work and, you know, figure out the financials and figure out who's going to be kept and who's not. I think Tre'Davious White's the guy who's expendable, you know, if you can lock up Rasul Douglas. But, you know, maybe easier said than done.
Yeah, definitely is. Still a little upset that Taron Johnson got an all-pro nod over Michael Carter. But come on. Look at the stats. Like, I'm not even talking about this. Like, I don't want to go down this road. But someone said that it's remarkable that Sauce Gardner has two all-pro nods in his first two seasons with having just two interceptions and both of them being in his rookie year. I don't know when this is going to click in people's heads, but when you don't get targeted, you're probably not going to get any interceptions. Yeah, you know how many times
we need to have you talk to Asante Samuel about this, who has made Sauce Gardner enemy number one. He says that there should be a minimum number of interceptions to be an all-pro.
It doesn't make any sense sense
at all.
Marcus Peters would be an all-pro every single year. So would Mike Edwards. You know what I mean? The guys that are just always like
all-pro corners, Trevon Diggs, Deron Bland every year.
Yeah. Like, it's funny. Someone did bring it up. It was like, I don't know when people are going to realize how mid of a season Deron Bland had, even with having, what was it, like nine interceptions and five interceptions returned for touchdowns. Like, first off, I'm pretty sure four of those five defensive touchdowns came when the game was like three scores or more. So obviously there's no context with these awards anymore. There's no, like, it's all about the final numbers. It's all about, oh, well, you know, I had five defensive touchdowns. Well, four of them came when you were up by 17 or more, you know, if those don't count as much as, hey, the game's tied with 2 minutes left and I just picked this ball off and ran it back for the game winning touchdown. It's there's no meaning behind these anymore. I said it 2 years ago when Trevon Diggs had what, 11 interceptions. I was like, he gave up over 1,100 yards over the course of the season. Like, how is no one seeing this, that when you get targeted, like, granted, he's a great ball hawk. I think he'd be a terrific safety. I think, like, if Deron Bland and Trevon Diggs were moved to the safety tandem, I think they would be the best safety tandem ever in terms of ball hawking. Like, they'd be great. But, like, I don't understand when people don't get, when you're targeted a lot and you have a lot of ball production like that, you're not that great. And there, of course, are a couple of exceptions. Champ Bailey's unbelievable season in, what was that, 2000, like 1999 or whatever. I don't remember what year it was, 2006, something like that. He was unbelievable. You know, you think of Darrell Revis, five interceptions, 31 pass deflections in 2009, like unheard of numbers. Like, he was insane. Same thing for some of these guys. Obviously, Deion Sanders was a dog too. Like, some of these guys just have great seasons. That's just what it is. But I don't know, man. I'm pretty sure Sauce Gardner was targeted, like, I think the number was either 32 or 41 times the entire season. So if you break that down, say he was targeted 41 times for the season. That's less than three times a game he's targeted. You know what I mean? Like, people don't get that. And if you look at the actual, like, raw numbers between Taron Johnson and Michael Carter, it's like not even close comparison. Like, Michael Carter was an absolutely unreal nickel corner this year. And that's not, you know me, I don't really use Jets bias with anything. I'll be the first one to tell you if someone sucked ass or not. But Michael Carter was, honestly, I think he was the best corner on the Jets this year. I think he was.
So you are officially on the Michael Carter All Pro train.
Yeah, well, it's not gonna. I mean,
it's not happening. Do anything, but you are the advocate for him right now.
Of course, and you know, someone has to be.
Yeah.
Okay. But getting back to the
best bias out there, you've got to counter it.
Got to counter it. Getting back to the matter at hand, though, I feel like this is a much watered down version of this rivalry between the Buffalo Bills and the Kansas City Chiefs, because both teams aren't the offensive juggernauts that they have been years prior. This is going to be a more defensive game, I feel like, than we've seen. Like, this is not going to be a 38-35, you know, game for the ages. This is going to be like a 16-9, like one of those type of games.
Yeah, especially in the, I mean, it's not going to be as cold as last week in Kansas City, but it's still going to be cold. It's going to be, I think, around 20. So, you know, and there's usually wind up there. I don't know what the wind situation is, but there's usually wind. So it's probably not going to be the best conditions for an offense. I think the Bills are obviously going to play the Chiefs tougher than the Dolphins, depleted defense did. But at the end of the day, it probably will come down to which team, you know, which quarterback makes a play, especially in a game that's close and, you know, low scoring. This is a huge game. Obviously, look, Patrick Mahomes would be very disappointed if he lost. With that being said, from our perspective, Josh Allen, there's much more on the line for Josh Allen here. If you lose to the Chiefs a third time in the playoffs, this time at home, in a season where, honestly, it feels like you have a great path to the Super Bowl, at least, it would be very tough to recover from. And then you really would face a difficult offseason because something has to change no matter what. Because you keep doing the same thing and you end up in the divisional round and no further. But if you win, you know, I honestly think they'd have a great shot in Baltimore. I mean, no matter what the weather is, no matter the conditions in Baltimore, I think I'd put Josh Allen up against Lamar Jackson any day of the week, and give him a legitimate shot to win. So, you know, if that ends up being the matchup, I think the Bills have a great shot, but they have to get there. Like, this is their roadblock here. So step one, if they knock out step one first, and yeah, I think defenses are going to play a huge role in that game.
I think we're getting dangerously close to the Chiefs and Patrick Mahomes falling into that like Tom Brady category where like everyone just hates Tom Brady because they're just so tired of seeing him there.
I understand it.
I get it because I'm tired of, like, I'm not going to lie. I'm going to be pretty devastated if Kansas City beats Buffalo. Cause like, I just don't want to see it anymore.
I think NFL fans in general want something new.
That's not
about the Chiefs. It's just in general, like, you know, if the Bills won the next three AFC titles, like, I think fans would want something new.
Yeah. And it's the same thing, even on the NFC side, I wouldn't mind seeing the San Francisco 49ers make the Super Bowl. You know why? Because they've been there, what, once in the last 3 years and they lost.
Yeah.
You know,
they haven't won one in our lifetime.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Like, it's not a team that gets there every single year. And I know it sounds like I'm hating.
Nobody in the NFC does. It's somebody different every year in the NFC.
I know. It's not like I don't want to sound like I'm hating on the Chiefs, but I'm just like in a year where there has been probably the most parity we've seen in decades, like, it just seems right that someone else would represent the AFC other than the Bengals or the Chiefs over the last like 5 years. You know?
Yeah. I mean, honestly, look, I think the Ravens would give him a tough time. Like, the Patrick Mahomes, I'll take over Lamar Jackson, but unless the Chiefs offense has genuinely made a huge transformation from the regular season, I think the Ravens defense would have their way with them. But, you know, then again, it is Mahomes in the playoffs. And by the way, they've been better on the road this year than at home.
Yes,
But, you know, so that's why I still think, you know, if you look at the odds, like, the Chiefs still have the third best odds to make it out of the AFC.
No,
and
it's
I think
crazy.
It's because this is tough to win two games on the road against legitimately good quarterbacks and good defenses too.
We've never seen Patrick Mahomes on the road in the playoffs, which is sick.
He probably likes that. He probably likes that challenge. But winning two of them is harder than winning one of them.
Yeah, even if he wins the one, I'm not going to lie, I'm going to be disappointed.
I will too. I mean, I kind of just said it before. I think a Bills-Ravens AFC title game would be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Texans fans. Like, I'm sorry that I'm kind of – I don't mean to rule them out. Anything can happen. But Bills and Ravens would be a lot of fun.
And that's like – that's got a little bit of backstory there, a little bit of like – who has more supremacy from the 2018 draft class? Like, is it Josh Allen? Is it Lamar Jackson? Like, this could potentially put the you know, who's better competition right now to bed between Lamar Jackson and Josh Allen. Like, everyone, my favorite thing is when people are like, I'll take the MVP over. It's like, all right, really? Because like, all right, like, but people always put like those accolades in there too. It's like, I'm pretty sure Josh Allen one of these years could have at least come close to winning an MVP. But yeah. Regardless, another thing that I admire about Josh Allen is that he just doesn't care about like that kind of stuff. He really just wants to like win. And I'm not saying Lamar Jackson does too, but it seems like all the Lamar Jackson truthers out there, all they care about is the MVP. Where like Josh Allen already has more incredible performances in the playoffs, where it really matters than Lamar Jackson. But we'll see. Both teams have to get through their opponents. We're getting a little ahead of ourselves here. You know, the Texans are not a short order, and the same thing either way. The Chiefs are a tall task for the Bills, and the Bills are a tall task for the Chiefs. It goes both ways. So
yeah, if you have a quarterback in this league, you have a shot in any game. You know, you may not have a shot to win the whole thing, but you can win any game. And the Texans have a quarterback. So it's not, you know, the Ravens haven't played in most of their starters haven't played. Yeah, most of them didn't play in week 18. So they have not played since New Year's Eve. Most of those guys. And this game's going to be on January 20th? That's 20 days. That's a long time. It is. And, you know, you find yourself in a hole. Everything's on the table at that point. You know, if you're down 10-0 or 14-3, let's say. So they're going to have to come out firing. Be interesting to see, too, if Mark Andrews is able to get back. I know he's activated. I think his status is still up in the air for this week. But, I mean, how huge would that be for them? You know, if they win this game and get to the AFC title game and they have Mark Andrews out there. I mean, that's a full group they've got, which is rare this time of year.
I just saw, I know you probably saw it already too, the whole Todd Bowles thing today with the Detroit Lions. Yeah, Detroit. I just, the quote itself is hilarious. Todd Bowles, when asked how the Bucks will deal with the weather in Detroit, "You do know we play indoors. They got a dome. We're inside and only have to be outside for about 20 seconds getting off the bus."
If you haven't heard the clip, you have to hear the clip too, because he says it in such a, you know, that Todd Bowles voice where like you can barely hear what he's saying because he's so soft-spoken.
Yeah.
He's like, it's almost like, I don't really want to call this person out, but I'm going to call her out.
God, I really, I love when, I was saying this to my friend this morning, because I sent him the clip and I said, we need more of this. Because, like, listen, these journalists and these writers and reporters get away with murder. They are just able to say and basically do whatever the hell they want. And the players, the coaches, everyone has to be very prim and proper. But no, I mean, like, if I was Roger Goodell, if he was fired and I took over as the commissioner of the NFL, the first thing I would do was literally be like, I would call everyone into a Zoom meeting and be like, listen, as long as you don't insult this person's, like, unless no racist, fascist, misogynistic comments, if you just give it to them the way that they give it to you, no consequences. Do whatever you want. You could curse. I don't care. Just don't do whatever you want. Because wouldn't it be more like, no one watches post-game interviews. Like, all we see, if people didn't clip these, like, little clips from post-game interviews, no one would ever see them. No one watches them. Imagine having free range to say whatever the hell you want. That's immediately must-see TV.
Yeah, well, like, that's like when Mike Tomlin walked off the podium the other day when they asked him about the, you know, well, she didn't even get the question out. She was like, "You have 1 year left on your contract," and he walked off the podium.
Good.
All the people in the comments were like, "Oh, why would you ask that question? How, you know, why would it's the game just ended? Ask about the game." That's the only question that people saw. Nobody listened to the rest of the press conference.
Yeah, that's like, what I'm saying.
That's the one that, like, there was only one question the entire time that you know about, and it's the one that wasn't even finished because he walked off the podium. So, you know, any question can be asked, and you can also say whatever you want back to them. Yeah, that would make for a lot of fun.
I would tune into every, especially like
those are the clips that people want to see. That's what goes around.
Yeah,
you know, when they ask Mike Tomlin, like, you know, what he thinks about Mason Rudolph's performance, nobody cares.
Who cares? Imagine, like, that's another thing too. Imagine if people always get lost in this transition where, like, I go through this all the time. Doing the content that I do on YouTube, people were like, "Well, huh, how could you say that they're going to draft a quarterback? They just said that Daniel Jones is their franchise guy. It's like, yo, they are lying to you. They have to say that. But imagine a world where they didn't. Imagine if, like, Brian Daboll was on the podium. They're like, what do you think about Daniel Jones? Be like, kid fucking sucks. We're drafting a quarterback. Like, I would love to see something like that. That would be amazing. And I know that that would cause, like, pandemonium in locker rooms. But, like, wouldn't it be funnier if just, like, everyone was able to roast each other? Imagine just being like, imagine, say, like, Zach, like, let's take one Zach Wilson performance. Say, like, the loss against the Patriots this year, where, like, the defense did everything they possibly could to keep them in the game, and he just couldn't get anything done. And, like, CJ Mosley was up there, and they're like, do you think that the defense could have done more? And I would have been like, no, motherfucker, we fucking played our hearts out there, but Zach Wilson couldn't complete a pass. Like,
actually, Zach Wilson kind of already did that when he, when they asked him, if he feels any responsibility, he's like, no.
Yeah. See, like, part of me really admired when he said that, because I was like, the sheer there's no self-awareness whatsoever in that quote, where he's just like, I think that he already had his mind made up for the answer, whatever it was. He was just going to say no, regardless of what she said. But, like, I would love to live in a world where it's just like, how do you guys feel about Zach Wilson's performance today? It's like, shit, did you see the fucking game? Like, he sucked. Like I would love to see that.
Society would be much better if Robert Saleh did that one time this year. Like, he would come out after every game and be like, well, it wasn't his best performance. It wasn't his worst. Like, if he just came out and said, like, that was complete trash. Like, I think we all would have just been better off.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I hate to make it, like, about the Jets. It goes for anyone. But, like, just imagine, like, you know how towards the end of the year where, like, it looked like Woody Johnson was, like, holding a shotgun to Robert Saleh's back up there. Like, he didn't want to be up there at all. Like, he would just answer. He'd be like, all right, well, we just got to get back to practice. And, we'll take it day by day. It's, like, the most generic, like, sad answers ever. Imagine if he was just up there and be like, listen, I don't want to answer any of your stupid fucking questions. Like, I'm done. Like, I would respect him way more than I do right now if that happened.
So basically, if he was Rex Ryan.
Yes.
Because that's what he was at the peak of his Jets tenure before he mellowed out a bit.
Yeah. I need to see more of that. I need to see, like, because don't you feel like, how people, some, like, salty New England Patriots fans were like, oh, thank God Bill's gone. Now we don't have to listen to his one word post game interviews. It's like, if that guy had free range to say whatever he wanted, I guarantee those post-game interviews would be much better.
Yeah, I hope that someday when he's done coaching, he, like, actually sits down for, like, a documentary or something, and he just feels, like, free to speak his mind.
Dude, I need to see a podcast between Nick Saban and Bill Belichick. Like, I need that. I need a weekly – like, that would be –
okay, but they've got to put their full personality into it. Like, they can't just do their, press conference.
Their shtick, yeah.
They've got to go. They've got to put everything they have into it.
But, like, you've seen, Saban has Saban, a personality.
Yeah, Saban will show some.
Saban's got a personality, but, and then, like, imagine Pete Carroll being, like, the producer of that podcast between the three of them. Like, him all happy go lucky, him being 97 years old and having more energy than me. Like, you know what I mean? That would be great. Or the three of them, honestly, where Pete Carroll just carries both of them, and they're like, well, what do you think about that, Bill? And he's like drinking his orange juice, and it's just like, yeah, well, whatever. Let's move on to the next question. That'll be amazing.
As much pain as Bill Belichick caused me for my entire life, he is a treasure.
He's comedy. He's so, like, people, I don't get where people are like, ah, he's so miserable and everything. Like, that's just the exterior.
Yeah, yeah, I don't think he is.
No. I don't think he is at all. I think he's hilarious. Same thing with Nick Saban. Like, I always would want to see a post-game interview with Nick Saban, especially if Alabama lost, because it was, like, pure comedy. He would just be completely sarcastic the entire time, not care about anything. Like, that's what we need. We need a Saban. We need like, someone like that in the NFL. And Mike McDaniel is pretty close to that, like, where he kind of messes with the reporters, but he doesn't.
Well, hey, you're about to get one. That's Jim Harbaugh.
Yeah, that's true.
Most likely. I mean, Jim Harbaugh, as the years go on, he's becoming more unhinged, but in a good way, I promise.
Unhinged.
But, like, he's clearly, like, not caring as much anymore about what people think. Like, he's going to give you a good quote every time. He also like fought two coaches when he was in the NFL. Like, he went at Jim Schwartz and then he went at Pete Carroll. So, you know, we're getting a good personality in the NFL. If he's
I wouldn't mess with Pete Carroll. That's one guy that I don't. I would not mess with Pete. Like,
I wouldn't either.
Jim Schwartz, even though he's a great defensive coordinator, seems like a little bitch. So I could see them going at it, but like Pete Carroll is someone that I would want absolutely no smoke with.
They like chased each other off the field in Detroit. Him and Jim Schwartz.
You know who I do want smoke with though? Arthur Smith. What a little whiny baby Arthur Smith is. Like, dude. Like. First off, this will be the last point because we're basically done with our itinerary. But first off, Jameis Winston is a national treasure and needs to be protected at all costs. That was like the most hilarious thing ever. Just going rogue completely. The pure disrespect for Dennis Allen is fantastic. And then the pure disrespect for Arthur Smith and not giving a crap about what he thinks too. My favorite thing were... basically, in not so many words, Jameis Winston said, hey, if you don't want to be scored on, don't get scored on. That's basically like what he said.
That was amazing. But why did Dennis Allen have to come out and be like, you know what? First of all, I want to apologize to Arthur Smith.
See, that's what I'm saying.
Stop. No. Your team showed no edge the entire year. Just you know, roll with it.
You know what? Now that I'm thinking about it, it might have been a test for Dennis Allen. It would have been like, you know what? If this guy rolls with what we're doing, then we're about it. And if he doesn't, we're going to revolt. Because the respect was kind of on the fence anyway.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
If the players respected him or not. If he would have came out and we were like, you know what? Fuck Arthur Smith. It would have been like, yeah, we're riding with DA, baby. But now it's like, oh, this guy sucks. Like, we gave him an opportunity and he did not take it whatsoever. But, oh, man, that was just great. And then, like, seeing Arthur Smith complain and then getting his ass fired, like, 15 minutes after the game. It was just pure cinema. Absolutely. You ever see that Martin Scorsese thing where it's like absolute cinema?
Yep.
That's what it was. And I know that probably breaks your heart because you love Arthur Smith. But
I just wanted one playoff game with Arthur Smith. I feel like that wasn't too much to ask. Like, if we could get him on the – because they had no – didn't they have, like, no primetime games this year?
Yeah.
Like, if we could just get one opportunity on the national stage for Arthur Smith where we could all, like, make fun of him, or even better, works. Like, could you imagine if they had just beaten if they won the division and, like, the Cowboys were the 5 seed or something, or the Eagles, I guess, since they were, and they beat them at home? I
mean, hold on a minute. Arthur Smith is only 41 years old.
Oh, yeah, he does not look 41. He's got that gray. Like
68.
No, he's got that gray.
Wow. I had no idea. I thought he was so much older than that.
Yeah, he's only
41. That's no good. You need to focus on your health, buddy, before you come back into the NFL. What do you mean, Arthur Smith, billionaire?
His father runs FedEx.
Does he really?
His father's like the founder of FedEx. They have billions.
Yeah, his father, FedEx founder, Frederick Smith.
Yeah, they're good.
Frederick W. Smith. Sounds very...
you don't have to worry about like Arthur Smith being unemployed, because they're good.
That is unreal. Wait, this is the best. This is the greatest thing ever. It says, Smith, the 41-year-old son of FedEx founder Fred Smith, finished with a record of 21-30. He went 7-10 each year, which is hilarious, by the way. Smith was dismissed after a 48-17 loss at New Orleans, the second worst setback of his tenure, topped only by a 43-3 rout at Dallas.
I don't even remember that.
It was 2 years ago. I don't even remember that either. But
that must have been an ugly one.
Oh, man, that is just I did want to mention Arthur Smith because
it is funny that he went out like berating Dennis Allen on the sideline. That was the last moment we saw of him.
Now, my question
at the middle of the field, I should say.
Now, my question is, what do you think? What do you think happens with Arthur Smith now? What does he do now? Does he take a year off to like de-age?
He's definitely got enough money to both sit out a year or de-age if he wants to focus on that.
He's only 41. Holy shit.
These coaches always get another shot. I'm not saying head coaching, but, you know, next thing you know, you're like a tight ends coach, and then the offensive coordinator gets fired, and you're the offensive coordinator again.
What would you do if the Jets fired Nathaniel Hackett and hired Arthur Smith?
It would be an upgrade. I'm not even kidding.
No, it would be. It definitely would be.
I don't care.
I know you would be ecstatic to just see that mustache on the sideline every single week.
I mean, look, he was he can do a lot of things. I think he was like a tight end coach for a bit, and you know, maybe there's a role for him somewhere.
All right. Well, now we have to go back, and now we have to see everything. Hold on.
I hired him before. Here, he started out as a defensive quality control coach with the Redskins.
What the hell does that even mean?
I don't know. Then he was a defensive intern at Ole Miss, and then a defensive quality control coach with the Titans, and then he switched to offensive quality control coach, then offensive line coach in Tennessee under Mike Munchak. And then assistant tight end coach, and then tight end coach, and then offensive coordinator. So you want to, you know, if you have a hole on that offensive line, you know, you want to make him the offensive line coach. He's available. If you need your quality controlled, he's around. He's done everything. He's been on both sides of the ball. I'm just saying, you know, it's different than Brandon Staley.
Imagine Jeff Ulbrich gets fired, and then who they bring in from the the Tokyo Dragons or whatever of the Japanese football league or whatever. Jim Tomsula comes out of nowhere.
He's in the German football league.
There you go. I couldn't remember, but oh my god, that's unbelievable. All right, I think we've had enough fun at the end of this one. Now all I'm going to think. Oh wait, let me see. All right, before we part. Arthur Smith is a very interesting looking character.
He is.
So there's one thing that I saw that was really funny, and I wanted to see if I could find it because it was like one of those Arthur Smith looks like, and then I can't remember what it was. Hold on. Arthur Smith. Twitter's a wonderful place.
I have a feeling this is going to be good if you can find it.
It doesn't even make sense. But it says Arthur Smith looks like he was a monkey that a wizard turned into a human.
I could see that.
Well, like, yeah, his like, hold on, I'm going to send it to you and you're going to look at that like photo and you're going to be like, oh yeah, this makes a lot of sense. It's just, oh my God, I love it. Oh, Dan Tracy. Where is it? There you are. There you go. I want to see your reaction to that.
Where is it coming to me?
Twitter.
Okay. yep, that's pretty much the picture I was expecting. The stash would be different. I honestly think he looks better with the stash, but this doesn't look normal. This is probably, so no stash here. This is probably when he was first hired, which means he was under 40 years old. And this does not look like a 40-year-old man.
No, absolutely. That's what I'm saying. He looks like he's like in his 60s.
Yeah. It's got 55,000 likes.
And then, of course, just to pique my interest, I looked up Jim Tomsula looks like. And the first one that came up was Jim Tomsula looks like a cheap version of Ron Jeremy. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, I think that is a perfect place to end episode 54 of the ASN podcast. Dan. It's always a pleasure, and I would really love to. I think I'm off on Monday next week. Why don't we try and get a recording in there after the divisional round of the NFL playoffs?
Yeah, I haven't even looked at my schedule. In fact, I don't even know if I have a schedule for next week yet.
Well,
but when I do, I'm pretty sure I don't yet. But when I do, we will definitely figure that out. Because
regardless, ladies and gentlemen, I think you'll be hearing from us again after the divisional round.
We got to talk about everything that happened this weekend
and everything that we were probably wrong about.
Yes, and then we're going to go into the AFC NFC title games, which we have both made clear. We hope that Patrick Mahomes is not a part of. Just nothing against him, right? Just
nothing against him.
Just
but fuck
a little
him.
Bit of a fresh, fresh weekend here. So there'll definitely be plenty to go over, I'm sure, because there's going to be hopefully not as many blowouts as this past weekend.
Ugh,